Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf alongside Nick Wright, Kevin Wilds. Chris Broussard is with us on a Wednesday morning. Coming up, wait till you hear some of the NBA proposals dealing with home court advantage. They are tremendously entertaining. Also coming up, could Daniel Jones be the next Dak Prescott? And will Brady be even better without Belichick? Talk about all that, but we got to start in the NBA this morning. We are now just one day away from the vote that'll determine the return of the NBA season. All right, guys, here's what we're hearing. The season will restart on July 31st with the NBA Finals ending on October 12th. Here's what we're knowing. Two teams vying to be in those finals are the Lakers and the Clippers. That series should have happened at LA's famous Staples Center, but now with the neutral site in Orlando, perhaps there is no advantage, home court advantage. Nick, I'll start with you. What do you think?
Well, so yeah, I see that our friends at Fox Bet saying the Clippers would be the neutral site favorite over the Lakers in a seven-game series, and I get that because they are trying to get, you know, the right number of bets on each side of the ledger, and you've had a lot of very influential media members peddling this nonsense all year, most notably Chris Broussard, about the big, bad LA Clippers. And so it has distorted the public's view of this. And so here's the thing, Broussard. The Clippers have three massive issues, any one of which could preclude them from beating the Lakers in a seven-game series. But all three of them put together, absolutely. If the Clippers are fortunate enough to go deep enough in the playoffs to meet the Lakers, would prevent them. Here's the issue number one. It's Lou Williams. And I really like Lou Williams. But Lou Williams is their crunch time clutch scorer. He is their go-to option late and close. And what we know about LeBron James teams in the postseason, if you have an incapable defender on the court because of what he does offensively, he is going to be pick and rolled to death as they did to Steph Curry, as they have done year after year for any LeBron team to a player such as Lou Williams. So you either are going to have to take your best late and close option off the court or deal with the fact that he is going to be roasted on the other end of the court. That's only the first option, the first problem. The second problem is when the Lakers go small, the Clippers have no answer. When Anthony Davis is at the five, the Clippers are a small team to begin with, but then all of a sudden, your biggest man is going to be Montrezl Harrell, and the Lakers will have two guys bigger than, and the two best players, by the way, bigger than the Clippers' five in that situation. And the last one is this. Playoff minutes, which is, I get it, Kawhi Leonard's been on this special program all year. Take 1 in 4 games off, and we'll try to keep you to 32 minutes a night like high school. But in the playoffs, you need to be ready to play 42 minutes a night because we know LeBron is. And all year long, you know how many times in a regulation game Kawhi Leonard played more than 40 minutes? Same as me, same as you, same as Jen and Wilds. Zero. And we saw when the Lakers played the Clippers right before the world shut down, Broussard, late in the game, a lot of hands on knees, tugging at your jersey from Kawhi because it's like, oh, I actually got to play 38 minutes tonight. My schedule hasn't built me for that. So 1, 2, 3 reasons. I see no reason why the Clippers should be anywhere close to favorites over the Lakers, Broussard.
Nick, there's a part of me, believe it or not, that hopes you're right. Because I would like to see LeBron win another championship. And it'd be nice if you got a prediction right in the NBA era every once in a while. So I hope you're right. But I make my predictions with my head, not my heart. And the Clippers are simply a better team. Look, you're right. That's the way the Lakers beat them in their last regular season meeting. They hunted Lou Williams. That's okay. The Clippers are the deepest team in the NBA. So they can finish the game with Kawhi, with Paul George, with Montrezl Harrell, with Marcus Morris, with Patrick Beverley, or Morris is out if they want. They can go Landry Shamet. They have all types of options they can use to get Lou Will off the floor if they have to. And don't act like they wouldn't have a closer. Kawhi Leonard can close games. Paul George, I know his record hasn't been great in closing games, but I trust him to hit some big shots at the end of games. The Clippers will be fine. Look, they got the fourth best record in the league, and they haven't even been healthy. As much as we talk about LeBron benefiting from this rest, theoretically, how about the Clippers? Kawhi missed 13 games. Paul George missed 22 games. Beverly missed 16. Shamet missed 17, and they still were a great team. They had no chemistry. They were dropping guys in and out of the lineup and still playing great basketball and fitting together well. So now that they'll all be healthy, they'll all be rested, they'll all be playing regularly every night, you haven't even seen the best of the Clippers, and you're about to in the playoffs.
Well, that last point you just made is your best argument, which is the Clippers are actually going to be a different team than we saw through 65 games. It's the best argument, which is, listen, don't believe everything we've seen. Believe the potential. Believe what they will be, what they could be. Because what we've seen is they're a tier two team. There are two tier one teams, Milwaukee and the Lakers. They proved it all year long, home road against everybody else. And then there's a bunch of tier two teams with Toronto, with the Clippers, with Denver. They're right there. The Clippers have been elevated to a place by everyone but me, seemingly, the moment they signed Kawhi and traded for Paul George, that they have not yet earned. But I have a question for you. You mentioned chemistry. Why all of a sudden, after a quarantine, months off, a team that added Marcus Morris, that added Reggie Jackson, who's always been great for chemistry, let me give Reggie credit, why is that team going to all of a sudden have chemistry when they haven't played together and they're not going to get the full 16 games at the end of the regular season they thought they were going to get to figure out rotations and to figure out chemistry?
Because they had chemistry as it was. That's my point. They had chemistry without even playing together. They dropped Kawhi in the lineup three out of every four games, and he fit fine. They bring Paul George back, and he fit fine. They were 7-2 with Marcus Morris and Reggie Jackson. Best record in the NBA, best point differential in the NBA when those two guys are there. And you're saying we don't know what they're going to look like. No, I know what Kawhi looks like. When Kawhi was in Toronto, he led them to a championship. When Kawhi was in San Antonio, his last playoff appearance there, they had the mighty Warriors down 22 points in the third quarter before he gets injured. Kawhi Leonard delivers. I've seen Paul George in the playoffs. He's taken LeBron James to seven games in the playoffs while he was the only star on the team facing a big three in Miami. And the Clippers are hungrier. They've got more dog. They got more nastiness.
Oh,
Patrick Beverly, Montrezl Harrell. They are dogs. They want it, Nick. They want this.
Oh, my God. There we go.
It's a hunger issue. It's a hunger issue. Let me bring Wilds into this. Wilds, Lakers, Clippers, Clippers, Lakers, Einhorn, Finkel. Where do you fall on all of this?
Well, I'm fascinated by the neutral site aspect of this because it kind of falls into two camps, whether the neutral site will really matter or it won't matter at all. And I think conventional wisdom is more what Frank Vogel said after the who won the game? Oh, the Lakers obviously beat the Clippers in March. Frank Vogel came out and said, we're at Staples Center. All Staples Center's games feel like home games. Obviously, our fans, Lakers fans, turn out no matter where we are, but particularly in the road game. So I think the common knowledge was, hey, if there's a seven-game series, Lakers-Clippers, the Lakers are constantly going to have the home court advantage. Here's a great video of the court being turned over. Now, the other side of this, Nick, is that this doesn't matter at all. This is from a Sloan paper that it's not crowd noise, doesn't have any effect on the players. It's not sleeping in your own bed, no effect. And it's not the physical court that we just saw being changed over. This is from a 2011 Sloan paper, Tobias Moskowitz. There's no conspiracy here. They're human. Talking about the refs. Psychology and social pressure is very powerful. They see the things the way the crowd does. So once we're in the neutral court and no one's talking about it, the way that the refs call the game might have the biggest impact on everything. Although, Nick, I do like the idea that Patrick Beverly is hungrier for a championship because I am just a huge Patrick Beverly fan, and I'm going to support him in anything he does.
Well, yeah, listen, the hunger aspect, the esoteric, the metaphysical is what the Clippers have to rely on at this point because we can't actually look at the evidence of the season, so I get it. I do think the neutral site part of it does help the Clippers a touch because the Lakers had earned home court advantage because they had tried this regular season because they hadn't rested their star who's in year 17 the way their Clippers did their star who's, I think, in year 9. They had actually, you know, paid attention to the integrity of the season, and now that advantage is taken away. Luckily, thankfully, for those of us that picked or bet on the Lakers, they are demonstrably better than the Clippers. So 7 neutral site games, 7 sites on Rucker Park here in Harlem, or 7 games in Drake's court in Toronto, it doesn't matter. The better team's gonna win. And the only thing I'm disappointed in, Broussard, is we're not actually gonna see it because the Clippers aren't gonna win the opening 2 rounds to actually let us see the Battle of LA take place in Orlando.
Nick, your only argument for the Lakers is this: LeBron's the best player in the world. But guess what? He's been the best player in the world in each finals he's been in, and he's lost 6 of them. That's not enough. It's going to be the best team, and the Clippers are the best team.
Back here with Chris Broussard, we're running our fast break now. How do you factor in home court advantage for the top seeds if the league will return to a neutral Orlando site? Well, according to a Dave McMenamin report, we got some interesting options. So sit back and enjoy these guys. First up, the higher seeded team would get the first possession of the second, third, and fourth quarters after the traditional jump ball to start the game. Nick, this could give the higher-seeded team an extra 1 to 2 possessions. Is that a big advantage?
It's a nominal advantage. It's an advantage worth between 1 to 2.5 points over the course of a game, typically, but I hate it. This, of all the ideas, this is the one I hate the most because this is the one that feels the closest to, we'll let the coach come out at halftime and shoot a free throw and the point will count. Like, no. We don't need this. I don't like it. This is, of all the ideas, I like this one the least. Scratch this one off the list, Wilds.
Yeah, I don't hate this idea, but it's got no juice to it. And I love this article by McMenamin. Just want to get that out of the way. On my report card, Broussard, I'm giving this one a C.
Go figure. Nick hates it. I love it. I think it's a great idea. I think it's the best idea of the bunch because it's not too much, but it is significant. And home court advantage is significant. 75% of the home teams have won their series in the playoffs in the last 10 years. So I like this one the best.
All right, moving on. Next up, how about this? The higher seeded team designates one player to get 7 fouls instead of 6, or the higher seeded team gets an extra coach's challenge. Nick, you like either of these anymore?
Well, I like the idea of players not being able to foul out in general. This is something I've talked with Daryl Morey a lot about. It should just be once you get your 6th, 7th, 8th, whatever foul, it should be an additional free throw for the opposition. You shouldn't take stars off the court. So that one's okay. The additional coaches challenge is an abomination. Coaches challenges in the NBA are terrible. The review process is terrible. The review process in every sport except for tennis is broken irrevocably and should be thrown into the sea. So the first one I'm fine with, I think actually could be a good idea. The second one is absolutely god-awful, Wilds.
No, the tennis replay is fascinating. It happens in 30 seconds somehow. It's like better than the actual game. I love this theory. This is my favorite McMenamin proposal. He's reporting them. It's not his proposals, but now I'm giving him credit. Broussard, I'm giving this one an A+, and here's why. The stars aren't really getting in foul trouble. Like, every once in a while it happens. I think you give this extra penalty to one of your, like, role players and let them play super aggressive. I think this one has the chance to really change the flow of the game more so than any of the other proposals.
No. This one's not very good. As Nick mentioned, the coach's challenge, that's the last thing we need is another coach's challenge. And then, as you said, when's the last time LeBron James fouled out of a game? When's the last time he's been in foul trouble? I mean, come on. It's irrelevant for the stars. They're not fouling them out of games. And then if you give it to a role player, Let's give, you know, our big man an extra foul. Then the game threatens to become too physical, which is not what you want, and it's goon ball. Or it might be a disadvantage to you because your extra guy, your guy fouls an extra time, and it sends the opponent to the free throw line to get more points.
LeBron famously fouled out of a playoff game, I think, his first year back in Cleveland. But the reason he never gets in foul trouble is because he's the smartest defender in the history of the league. Now, for a guy, and I know his team's not in the playoffs, Steph Curry, one of his most embarrassing moments in the NBA in his career, when he fouls out of a game, throws a mouthpiece at his fan, and his wife says the league is rigged. If he had his seventh foul there, could have been really useful for him. So for certain guys, that seventh foul would be useful, I do think, Jen.
All right, let's keep it moving. I got another one for you. The next alternative would have the higher seeded team send their actual home court to Orlando, like the floorboards, the signage, the restrooms. Probably not the restrooms. Nick, how much of an advantage would that be?
Oh, it wouldn't be an advantage, but this idea should be implemented post-haste for all teams. That way, it kind of helps you in your mind. What game in the series are we in? We look at the court. We're like, oh, it must be game three because the Magic, it's on the Magic court. I love this idea. I have no idea why they wouldn't do this no matter what for every series of the playoffs. It is, I don't think there's any advantage, but aesthetically, it would be so much more pleasing, except for Brooklyn. Brooklyn doesn't get to send their ugly gray home court. They shouldn't even have that at home. But for the other teams, they all get to send their home court. I love it, Wilds.
I love it, too. I think for TV purposes, this should be a mandatory rule. Broussard, I'll take it a step further. Hey, send your banners, too. Don't let it just be a floor thing. Send your banners. So you look up like, oh, my goodness, we're playing the Lakers. Look at all these banners that are hanging up. So I'm all for it, Broussard.
You guys finally got one right. I agree. It just makes natural sense. I mean, you want to try to create as much normalcy as you can. So, yes, the team with the home court advantage should have their home floor. It means nothing for the team. It will give you no advantage whatsoever. But for us fans watching it, it is great. And I like the banners idea or, you know, whatever else they can add to make it look like, you know, it's at this team's place.
All right. Next up, my favorite one. The playoff team select which hotel to stay at in order of seating. Nick, you sleep on a pullout couch. You're used to those accommodations. But how much could sleeping arrangements affect the 7-foot NBA player during the playoffs?
The pullout couch line is a very odd one. I'm trying to fully process it in my head at the moment. But once I move past that, this is the best idea. And I will say this, and Broussard's going to get all histrionic and say I'm crazy. I know I'm right about this. I think if you ask teams, would you rather have an extra possession a game as the first proposal was, or first draft pick of all the hotels, I think every team in the league would say give us the hotels. They're used to 5-star Ritz-Carlton suites. There is a big difference, if you've been to Disney World, between the very, very best of the resorts and some of the, call it more affordable resorts. So if you're telling me the Bucks can stay at, I don't know, Magic Mountain or Animal Kingdom, wherever it is, and meanwhile, the Grizzlies or whomever have to stay across the street from the Ramada Inn, I think this is a great idea. I think it actually rewards the teams the most of any of the ideas, and I think it'd be the most popular idea amongst the players. This one definitely should happen, and it wouldn't actually change the rules of the game at all, like the fouls or the challenge or the extra possession would. I think this is the best of all the ideas, and I want this draft televised. I want to see teams say, okay, we select this locale. I want to see it. Go ahead, Wilds.
Okay, it was good. So it's the Four Seasons in the Grand Floridian. I think you were talking about the players staying at actual rides in Disney World, which I don't think would be a good idea. So it's the Grand Floridian and the Four Seasons are the big ones. And here's why I actually think this makes total sense. If the season starts July 31st, Broussard, and then Woj reported it would go to October 12th, that's a month plus. That's a long time, and it's not just the beds. You're also probably getting access to better conference rooms. I don't know what the food is, but those are food differences. I think this is a huge, huge advantage, and I think the only fair way to do it is seating.
Look, I have to be honest. My kids are 22 years old. It's been decades or plus since I've been to Disney World. So I don't know what their hotels are like. But I would imagine that the majority of them are very good. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But I think the majority of their hotels are very good. None of them are going to have beds for seven-footers. The players always sleep horizontally or, you know, at an angle as it is, even in the five-star hotels. So I don't think this is a huge advantage. It's cute, you know, and maybe it helps you a little bit, but it doesn't equate to home court advantage. I'm serious about this thing. Home court is huge.
I got to disagree with you there just for a second, Broussard. I just got back from Disney World before everything changed. All the hotels are great. Some are a little more great than others. Next up, the higher-seeded team gets to select their opponent. Nick, I know this one's a little far-fetched, but let's have some fun anyway. What are your thoughts on this one?
Oh, it might be far-fetched, but this is how all playoffs should work in all sports, in all circumstances. This is the best idea. This should be implemented across all leagues. You draft your opponent. And by the way, there could be some weird mind games going on. And you remember a few years ago when the Warriors kind of punted on the regular season, didn't end up with the best record in the West? The Rockets did. And then at the very end of this regular season, Steph Curry got hurt and had to miss the beginning, or if not the entirety of the first round. I think it was the entirety of the first round of the playoffs. Under this scenario, then, the Rockets could have said, give us Golden State now. We've earned the right. We're going to have to go through them anyway. So if we're talking, we were just talking Lakers-Clippers. Lakers have second best record in basketball. I assume the Bucks would pick the Magic or something. The Lakers, I mean, the Clippers, Kawhi's going to have to have played for two straight weeks. Probably going to be exhausted, need some time off. The Lakers might just say, give me the Clippers now, before Kawhi is fully rested the way he needs to be. Like, it opens up so many doors of possibility, and it creates a legitimate, they don't believe in us aspect for every team, because your opponent said, we want you. So I love this idea, and it truly does reward the best teams of the regular season who have accomplished the most wilds.
I love the idea too. McMenamin in the article wrote that doesn't have a lot of momentum, but maybe after your impassioned speech, Nick, the momentum will grow. Broussard, I think this is particularly interesting for this year because I don't think those later seeds are actually could show up and be different teams. If Portland comes back with Nurkic and Collins, they're not really an 8 seed. Their team looks totally different. If, and I'm not saying it's going to, but if Durant and Kyrie come back, that's not really a 7 seed. That seed looks like a 3 seed, and maybe the Bucks want to play somebody else, Broussard.
There's a reason McMenamin wrote that this has no momentum, and there's a reason that it's never happened. This is not street ball, all right? These are professionals. We're not picking sides. We're not picking our opponents. You know what, in that vein, Nick? Let's make it, take it. How about that? Make it, take it as well.
Great.
You know, our voices is at Disney. Let's play outside. Let's really make it street ball since we're going all out for this. Come on.
Play horse.
I know you're joking and you're a wildly hilarious human being, including as well as being a great man. But I want to take this seriously for a second, Broussard. We complain about the NBA, the regular season not mattering that much. If you know that someone could pick you off in the first round because you suffer a minor injury to a star player at the end of the regular season, and the way to avoid that is to make sure you are the one picking your first round opponent instead of someone picking you, it solves a lot of the, who cares if we're the 3 or the 4 seed? Who cares about this regular season game? And everyone's got to beat everyone anyway to become a champion. Like, I personally think it would just add massive intrigue, and I've advocated for this across all sports. I think it's a great idea. I don't think it's hokey, like make it, take it, but that could be interesting as well.
Look, I'll give you this. If they had been doing this for years and we were used to it and this is the way it was done, then maybe, because it would add some intrigue. But you said it all along, Nick. We don't want to make this strange season too gimmicky. And I think that's just too radical of a change. I like some of the other ones, the reseeding and all that. This is too radical to throw in right now. Maybe something you discuss in the future, but I think that would really make people want to put an asterisk by this championship.
All right, let's transition to some football. Can Brady succeed without Belichick and vice versa? Next, first things first. Back here with former All-Pro running back Brian Westbrook. We're drawing a blank. So how good is Jimmy G, really? Well, offensive tackle Trent Williams, who spent his last 9 seasons protecting subpar quarterbacks, if you will, in Washington, was traded to the Niners this offseason. He's super high on his new quarterback, saying, quote, "I think Jimmy Garoppolo is awesome. He has proven he's a quarterback you can win with." So, Nick, Trent's comments on Jimmy G, even though he hasn't played with him yet, are blank.
Yeah, this is disappointing to me. Trent Williams, a player I like a lot, because Wilds, you know this, number one on my list of importance when it comes to sports, take integrity. And Trent, I apologize to say, I feel this is a lack of take integrity by him. I don't think he actually feels this way. I don't think Trent Williams was out there watching football last year from his couch when he wasn't playing for Washington. He was like, you know who I think's awesome? Jimmy Garoppolo. You know who I think's a great quarterback you can win with? Jimmy Garoppolo. I think he's only saying this because he's on the team now. And I know everyone's going to say, obviously, that's why he's saying this, but I'm disappointed. I want take integrity to spread like wildfire across this nation. And now we've got Trent Williams on the West Coast spreading this nonsense. Oh, I think Jimmy G's awesome. Trent, no, you don't. You know you don't. I know you don't. Everyone knows you don't. So it's a lack of take integrity. Brian Westbrook.
You know, Nick, I totally disagree with you. I think his comments are legitimate because I think Jimmy G is a quarterback that you can win with. The truth is that Bill Belichick, who we all respect, would have still had Jimmy G as their starting quarterback, and we would have never heard of Jarrett the Javelin Stidham if Bill Belichick had it his way. Here's the other part. He was, 10 minutes away from being a Super Bowl champion? He is a quarterback that you can win with. He's a quarterback that can take you to that game. He hasn't proven that he can win it quite yet, and he faced one of the best quarterbacks in the modern football history, Patrick Mahomes. So you got to remember this, and when you talk about this, Wild, he's only started 16 games last year. Before that, he had only started 5 games in the most in this season. So to me, he still has some room to grow. He still will continue to get better. I have no problem with Trent Williams' comment.
I don't either. And thank you for mentioning Jarrett the Javelin Stidham. Jarrett, hope you're all as well this week with you. Look, I like take integrity too. And I like honesty, Nick. I'm going to just tell you, the guy was one pass away from being a Super Bowl champion. He had, I wrote on my little card, 67 yards. I know you can't read it, it's on a little card. He had 219 yards in the Super Bowl. Mahomes had 286. They both threw 2 interceptions. One guy becomes the greatest quarterback of all time on the top tier right next to Tom Brady. And the other guy, you're not willing to say, is great. He's a great quarterback. He's practically a Super Bowl champion.
Oh, my God.
I know it was close.
Oh, my
so
God.
It is, Nick. He's great. He's a great quarterback. Oh, he is. Okay. Take integrity. Okay. He's good at quarterback.
That's terrible.
Good quarterback.
That's terrible. That's terrible.
He's a good quarterback.
And Brian's right. You know who loved Jimmy G? Bill Belichick, Nick. You do know that. And
that's
if things
right.
were different, he'd be playing
he also
for the
likes
Patriots,
the javelin.
Right?
Right. The hell's that mean?
It's true. He didn't have much of an option. Let's talk some Tom Brady now. His former Patriot teammate Heath Evans is excited to see Brady spread his wings in a new environment. Evans saying, quote, "I got no doubt Tommy's going to be brilliant without Bill, but Nick, I'll let you decide. Tommy sans Bill will be blank."
The exact same this year he would have been with Bill Belichick. Old. Listen, folks, people think I hate Tom Brady. I don't hate Tom Brady. He's just old. And that doesn't, now, that means two things. One is, it means likely he be lying. And the other one it means is he's not going to be good. He's 43 years old, or he's about to be. We've never seen a quarterback anywhere close to his age have an extraordinary season like everyone's predicting for Tom. We just saw him come off the worst year of his career. Everyone blamed the poor first-round pick N'Keal Harry like it was his fault that Tom Brady was skipping passes in the dirt. He's old. It's nothing against him. He's the greatest of all time. but he's old. With or without Bill Belichick, unless he gets Jenna's time machine from yesterday to where he also can be 35 years old like he was a decade ago. He's just going to be old, Brian Westbrook.
I, for one, will sign up for a time machine, but I think Tom Brady without Bill Belichick will be cool Tommy B. And here's the reason why. Bill Belichick's system grinds on you. It takes a lot out of you. It's no fun. You heard that from Gronk. And I think Bruce Arians, he runs a totally different ship. It's laid back. It's more relaxed. And I think that's going to be much better for Tom Brady at this point in his career. Last season, the Patriots had one receiver over 1,000 yards. That was Julian Edelman. James White, the reserve running back, was the second best receiver. 2018, they had no receivers over 1,000 yards. James White was the leading receiver at 850 yards. Conversely, when you look at the Buccaneers, the quarterback threw for 5,000 yards last season. You had two receivers over 1,100 yards, over 65 catches. This is a revamped offense, an offense that has a bunch of weapons, which he did not have in New England. Oh, and you have Rob Gronkowski, your security blanket. This is a great time for Tom Brady.
I like the word security there, Brian, because I wrote at risk. I know I was big on this, and then I got off of it a little bit, but I just want to remind everybody, Bruce Arians, his quarterback, he's not a great protector here. Big Ben, 47 sacks first year. Andrew Luck had 41 sacks in 2012. Carson Palmer took 37 sacks. Jameis got sacked 47 times. We're not even counting his scrambles that he avoided sack that Tom Brady's not going to be able to do. So I'm going to put at risk. I'm hoping Tom is okay, but I feel like this is a storyline that unfortunately is going to pop up during this year.
But Wilds, pliability. He's so pliable. He'll be fine getting knocked down.
Oh, I forgot pliability.
Times.
All right, edit that out.
There
pliability.
You go. Moving on to free agent running back LeSean McCoy now. He recently had a bit of a hot take on Instagram. It's Shady posting Hall of Fame on the way when I say I'm done. The take was so hot, in fact, he later deleted for reasons we'll never know. Our guy Nick might know. Nick, Shady's Hall of Fame chances are blank.
Unfortunately for Shady, I think they're a year short. Now, he did just make the all-decade team, which obviously helps him tremendously, but they didn't separate that into first and second team all-decade, so I don't know if it's going to carry the cachet it once did. But in all the numbers, all the benchmarks he would need, it would appear he's one great season away. He's got 73 rushing touchdowns. The threshold typically for running backs make the Hall is 80. He's got 11,000 rushing yards. For the running backs to make the Hall, you usually need 12,000 rushing yards. If you want to go all-purpose because he's a great receiving back, it's 89 touchdowns. You typically need 100. He's got just under 15,000 yards from scrimmage. Usually need 16,000. So if he's got one more 1,000-yard, 10-touchdown season in him, Brian, I think your former teammate makes it. But where he stands right now, and as he finished with the Chiefs, I don't know if he has that left, I think he's going to be just short, unfortunately.
Well, I think McCoy's chances of making the Hall of Fame are very good. And you've laid out all the numbers, 11,000 rushing yards, that's impressive. Almost 4,000 receiving yards, to me, that's impressive. But his effect on a defense, I'm talking about the fear that he was able to strike into defenses in his prime, the ability to make people miss in the open field for a long time was unparalleled. I just have to believe those 4 years that he spent in Buffalo kind of filtered him out just a little bit because people started to forget about him because those seasons and those years, those Buffalo teams were not very good. But LeSean McCoy was still very good, over 850 yards, two of those years in which he had over 1,000 yards. I think he still has a very good chance of getting into camp.
See, I put better than you think. And Nick, the all-decade thing is a funky team. Because it depends so much, as you famously know, you got mad that Mahomes wasn't on the all-decade team. Just depends when you come into the league. So he came into the league, and then he had the whole decade to sort of, like, accumulate stats. The other guys in the all-decade team, so in that last decade, he led the league in yards and touchdowns, 85 touchdowns. I think that included receiving touchdowns. But the other guys that led the league, Von Miller, Julio Jones, Drew Brees, Richard Sherman, they were all in. So it might just kind of luck out that he just was in a nice period and be like, this guy dominated that decade.
And no matter what, guys, he believes he's worthy of the Hall of Fame. And as the famous George Costanza said, it's not a lie if you believe it. On to the Cardinals now. Their all-pro cornerback, Patrick Peterson. He recently said his head coach, Cliff Kingsbury, quote, has a lot of Andy Reid in him. Nick, Peterson's comments on Cliff Kingsbury are blank. You're Andy Reid guy.
Listen, that's the highest of praise. I mean, Andy Reid is the second best coach of this generation. The Super Bowl cemented that. So Cliff Kingsbury, I mean, could only hope that this ends up being true. It means he'll win double-digit games basically every year, go to the playoffs basically every year, make a bunch of conference championship games, and win a Super Bowl. So, Brian, this is the highest of praise about for Cliff Kingsbury regarding your former head coach, Andy Reid.
This is also great news for Kyler Murray. And Andy Reid has been one of the best quarterback developers that we've seen in a very long time. Obviously, Donovan and, you know, the guys, Patrick Mahomes out there in Kansas City. He's been able to develop quarterbacks, but he's also been able to, you know, win games for a long time. You talk about longevity. If Cliff Kingsbury can be what Andy Reid has been as far as longevity goes, that would be impressive. I just remember Andy Reid, him drawing up plays, designing plays on napkins and scrap pieces of paper and being ready to call those plays and design guys open. Cliff Kingsbury has a great team. DeAndre Hopkins, you talk about Kenyon Drake as well as Kyler Murray. He has the ability, the team to do it. Can he be like Andy Reid as far as doing it in the game? That's a big question.
I went with optimistic here. I thought it was an optimistic take, but I liked it. And he's been successful. They were dead last in points. Well, they think they scored like 14 points a game. Then Cliff Kingsbury got them to the, like, middle of the pack. So maybe this year they'll be like much, much better. Problem is, old Nick Wright, you know, prognosticator of prognosticators, has got the Cardinals at 7-9. Now once you get compared to the Chiefs, though, the Chiefs halo effect, the Kansas City halo effect, that, Nick, does that affect your rankings at all? Because I know the sheets are already laminated and printed and going out to fans around the world. But now, has this changed your, predictions at all?
I like the Cardinals. I think they're in a brutal division with the Niners and the Seahawks. And I'm not yet sold on Kyler the way everyone else is. I'm still concerned about the height. And I need to see him do it this season. But hey, if Cliff Kingsbury is Andy Reid, and if Kyler's a tick better than I thought, then yeah, that 7 wins could become 9 or 10 wins. I just don't see it for the Cardinals this year, Jenna.
All right, guys, we got some big NFL news to talk about on the other side. Could a holdout for a big star be on the horizon? That's next on First Things First. Time for stories to start your morning, sponsored by Midas. Trust the Midas touch. So the NFL announced yesterday that due to COVID-19, training camps will be conducted only at team facilities, and there will be no joint team practices this season. Brian, I covered your Eagles when your training camp was up at Lehigh University. You slept on cots. You ate dorm food. I don't think it was that great, at least the accommodations. You think this has any impact on the players?
You know, I think this has great impact on your players. At your team facilities, you have the best technology, the best support staff, the best weight rooms. You have great facilities there. They built these facilities to look great because these teams need that type of support. So why would you ever want to move away from that? And just like you mentioned, I was up in Lehigh. We're up early in the morning. We're practicing, going as hard as you can. So the coaches are asking you to get everything that you can. And then you go home and you sleep in those dorms with the 4-inch mattress. Imagine Trey Thomas, yeah. John Runyon, 6'7", 320 pounds, sleeping on a 4-inch mattress in a college dorm. That sounds absolutely crazy. You need your rest. Getting your rest at home is probably the best thing for players.
This is good news, smart safety precautions from the NFL. I am a little bummed out that we don't get joint practices. I missed some of my favorite moments of Hard Knocks history. Specifically, it was Jake Matthews and J.J. Watt comes up and they're like, and now the young rookie, Liev Schreiber, now the young rookie must face J.J. Watt, the all-pro. And J.J. Watt comes in and destroys him. And then you got the inner team fights. I always like those, Brian. Luckily, our researcher, Dusty, reminded me, now we'll just have fights within the team, the old Cam Josh Norman, grab the face mask fight. So I still have those to hold on to, but I will be upset. No more joint practices.
And teams love the joint practices. You've heard certain coaches say you get more done in the joint practices than you do the actual preseason games. I think in the future, obviously, the joint practices will come back. But I do wonder if more teams after this year are going to go to, we don't need to travel to some college for training camp because of the reasons Brian said. I know some coaches and general managers believe it creates bonding. The team gets away from everyone. They're only amongst each other. But the sacrifices, the comfort of the accommodations, and the comfort of being able to, once you're done with this hard work day, be with your family. So the only added wrinkle I will include in this is for teams in really hot weather cities, some of those teams hold training camp elsewhere so they can hold more practices outdoors, not 90 degree heat. So for like the Cowboys this year, unless they're going to be doing a lot of it indoors, those players are going to be dealing with a far hotter training camp than they're usually used to in Oxnard under the beating sun of Dallas, Texas.
All right, let's move on to the New York Giants now. Their new offensive coordinator, Jason Garrett, will apparently be bringing his cowboy ways to the Big Apple, with NFL Network's Steve Mariucci saying, quote, Daniel Jones is going to be developed like Dak Prescott. Nick, the Dak method is to play well, lead well, throw well, and then ask for a ton of money. What do you make of the comparison?
Listen, it'd be great for Daniel Jones if he could play like Dak Prescott. Step one is hold on to the football, Daniel. How about this for a fun fact? Did you know that Daniel Jones in his NFL career has had one game without a turnover? Did you know that Daniel Jones averaged 1.8 turnovers a game last year? Only Jameis averaged more. And that's because he fumbled the ball an incomprehensible 18 times. Daniel Jones comes in that Tampa Bay game, leads a comeback despite a couple fumbles, and everyone, the whole media was like, oh my God, let me give a written apology for my pre-draft criticism of Daniel Jones. Wilds, you weren't with the show yet, but I stood alone on an island saying I will not apologize to Daniel Jones. I stand by the criticism, and I stand by it to this day.
He's right,
so
Wilds.
If he can turn into Dak Prescott, then I will owe him an apology, but I'm yet to see it, and he's got to hold on to the football. That is step zero of becoming a competent NFL quarterback. Stop dropping the football, Daniel.
Okay, I think he's not going to drop the football so much this year. Why? I don't know. It just feels like that's a rookie year thing. The one thing I do like about this, Brian, is that they brought in Cooper Rush, Dak's old backup. And we talk about so many like, oh, what's Jalen Hurts doing and what's Jordan Love doing? And Cooper Rush is like, yo, I'm here to help. We're going to do the little Cowboys thing. I'm here to help you out. So I think that's a very good quarterback room, and I expect Daniel Jones not to drop the football and excel this year.
You know, if I was a Giants fan and they said that Daniel Jones is going to develop like Dak Prescott, I would be upset and mad. Daniel Jones was the 6th overall pick in the draft. Dak was 135th pick. And you're telling me that my 6th-year overall pick is going to be handing the ball off to Saquon and hoping to win that way like Dak did early in his career? To me, that would be a slap in the face. I want my 6th overall pick to be able to go out there and win games for me immediately. And that's what Daniel Jones has to do. If you develop like that, to me, you picked him in the wrong spot. That's not a top 10 pick. You have to pick him later on in the draft.
Come on, Daniel. Be more like Patrick Mahomes. On to George Kittle now. His agent recently said George is a very special player. He needs a special contract, which prompted Sports Illustrated to immediately write a column on how Kittle could be prepared to hold out if he doesn't get that special contract. Brian, back to you. Is a holdout a real possibility for Kittle?
Absolutely, it's a real possibility. Jenna, back when I was playing, I held out because I may not have been the best running back in the league, and I think George Kittle probably is much higher on the list than I was at the running back position. But I did a lot for my team. I ran the football, I caught the ball out of the backfield, I played special teams, and I blocked. George Kittle does just as much for the San Francisco 49ers. He's one of the best blockers on the edge. Of course, you can line him up at the wide receiver position, he can get open. You can line him up on the end of the line of scrimmage, he can find a way to make plays there. You have to worry about the yards after the catch. And most importantly, he brings that toughness and attitude to that offense. And so if they don't want to pay him, I absolutely would support a holdout for George Kittle.
I would too. And like you, Brian, I've also held out. Sometimes on this show, if I don't get a topic that I want in the show, I refuse to put in my mic. And Wilder, everyone's like, Wilder, are you here? And I'm in the other room just holding out with and just waiting, making everybody wait. Let them know that I'm serious about the next topic. The next day I want in. Look, Nick, there's 99 more days till football kicks off. I don't think he's going to hold out, but I'm happy that we've sort of got a countdown to looking forward to some football.
He's crazy if he plays this year under this contract. Scheduled to make $2 million bucks. The most he's ever made in a season base salary is $600,000. And the franchise tag next year would be awful for him. It'd be like $8 million. He thinks he should be making $14 or $15 million, totally resetting the tight end marketplace. So he's in the last year of his deal. He is far overachieved. They have to give him a new deal. If I'm George Kittle, if I'm advising him, there's no way you play this year under the final year of a mid-round pick contract. You just can't do it. You've got to hold out if they won't pay you, Jenna.
All right, and finally this morning, Steelers Pro Bowl running back James Conner was asked yesterday about his famous Twitter picture of that chiseled back, saying it was, quote, it was just the angle, it was the way I flexed. A lot of people look like that. Nick, go ahead, pop that shirt off. Let's see what you got. Let me see your back. Just unbutton it. You can leave your
I'm not interested in that. Show us. I'm not interested in that, no. But I appreciate James Conner confirming, at least in slight, what I said, which is this is nonsense. This is not, if you walk behind James Conner, that's not what you see, Brian Westbrook. I don't care what he's, this is either, it's Photoshopped or some airplane angle down on his back. Brian, nobody's back looks like that, and certainly not an NFL running back's.
It's hard for running back to have a back like that. But all this means to me is that I need to start getting my Instagram angles up. Like Jenna Wolf. Jenna does a great job getting the six-pack, the abs, everything. I got to step up my game on Instagram. I know that.
I love that your takeaway was Instagram angles. Wilds, you want to chime in? We got a few seconds left.
Well, I I'm a pliability guy, so this doesn't, muscles don't matter. It's all about pliability.
Got it. We got to go, everyone. Stay safe. We'll see you tomorrow.